Welcome to the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America with Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett. Take it away, boys.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you today, and we've got a great show headed your way, so get comfortable. It should be a lot of fun, and maybe a few fireworks headed your way as well as we recap what happened at Torrey Pines at the PGA's Tour Stop, the Farmers Insurance Open, over the past weekend, over the past 4 days. And Patrick Reed has a trophy and a little bit of controversy that kind of hooked onto that trophy, and we'll talk about that as well. When does Patrick Reed not have controversy in his rounds of golf? So our good friend Steve Johnson with Hank Haney Golf is going to be joining us to talk a little bit about that. That's his stomping ground. He's from the San Diego area and knows Torrey Pines very, very well. So in addition to Reed, we'll give us a little recap on what the tournament was like there. As a matter of fact, he was just in San Diego a couple of weeks ago. And so he'll give us a bit of an update on the tournament and what he's thinking about maybe down the road a little bit for future PGA Tour events and where we're headed. We also always have Frank Bassett in our Nashville studios join us. How you doing today, Frank?
Hey, doing good. It was a lot of fun to watch yesterday, boys. I'll tell you, it was.
It was
a slow tournament, kind of boring a little bit, but But the drama started on the back and after number 10, and that was fun. But no, we have snow in Nashville. Weather alert. Snow everywhere. Snowing right now. Craziness. Yeah. 70 degrees last week. Played golf. I won't tell you what I shot, but it was a big number. And I'm glad Steve's on because I have a couple of questions for him today.
I actually talked to my brother yesterday in the suburbs of Chicago, and I FaceTimed him, and wow, they got like 10 inches. And he showed me. And there's some, I get it. I mean, there's parts of it that's beautiful. It's pretty. I mean, his backyard was gorgeous, and all the trees are covered and everything else. It's gorgeous if you're looking at it and you're not living there. If you have to actually live through it and shovel, he was on his third trip of shoveling the driveway because it just kept coming down. He kept shoveling, also driving it and everything else. It can be a bit of a pain, but it looked pretty. He had a nice little winter wonderland going in his backyard, and I think it's still snowing again today in Chicago. Pretty, so like you said about Nashville. So,
but up there a week later, it's still there and it's brown. So it's pretty when it's white,
it's slush,
and fluffy.
It's slushy and nasty, and kind of the bad part about it. Well, let's get to him. He's hanging tight because he's got a lot of work to do. He's Steve Johnson, managing partner with Hank Haney Golf and also the proprietor of the Golf Ranch, his own facility there, just a little north of downtown Dallas. That is an amazing facility for people who want to work on their game a little bit. Next time you're in Dallas, you can check it out there, the Golf Ranch. And he's Steve Johnson. He's with us now. How you doing today, Stevie?
Hey, doing great, guys. Good to be with you. Hey, I was in San Diego yesterday, by the way.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Yeah. I thought it was a few weeks ago.
But it was like a ghost town there. No one at the tournament, which is, that's a shame because, you know, they do the military tributes and all that. And a lot of the military bases there in San Diego, a lot of the money goes to support programs for the military, all branches of the military, Navy, Marines, Army, you name it, and they've got it there. And but no one was there at the tournament. And no one was really at the airport, and no one was really in downtown. I mean, it's a ghost town there.
Wow, really?
It is
really
a ghost
town. So is the Gaslight District shut down? I mean, the restaurants and all that?
Yeah, all of that shut down.
Man.
Little Italy is shut down.
Oh.
You know, I mean, it's really a ghost town. We had 49 on a plane, an American Airlines jet that would seat about 300. We had 49 people on the flight out there.
Wow.
So, they are hurting badly. Now, finally, their governor says, hey, we got to open this thing up. We just can't sustain it. And they say, hey, where have you been, buddy?
He's 200,000 signatures away from a recall, too. So,
yeah.
I think they have 1.3 and maybe 1.5. So,
yeah. You know, I was just like, we hear about it in L.A. So, same thing, I guess, in San Diego as far as the shutdown part of it's going. So, you kind of don't think about it because L.A. kind of gets all the attention about what's going on there with COVID. But, San Diego, same boat there. So I'm sorry, Frank. Go ahead.
That's okay. No, I was going to say I love San Diego. It's a fabulous place. The golf there is incredible. The last time I was there, though, this will tell you something. Is been to L.A. a bunch, but not to San Diego. Was for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Super Bowl victory.
Oh, really?
So that's many years ago.
When was that? 2002, maybe.
When John Gruden had taken over the team, and. Yeah, that was a long time ago. So, but exactly. I love that. Yeah. I love that Gaslight District and Little Italy, whatever. And oh, what a great town! And the military, Steve's yeah. right. The military presence
big
there,
military town.
Well, it's just yeah. it's so. It, you know, living in Ponte Vedra or Jacksonville as long as I did, we had Mayport there, which is the North Atlantic aircraft carrier fleet is based there, basically, in Jacksonville. Well, the Pacific fleet is based, part of it is based there in San Diego, and it's so cool to look across the water and see all those fabulous, majestic ships, our battleships and yeah. cruisers and all that. It's just a great town, great town.
Yeah. One of the things that San Diego different countries has that's a little bit unique, them. And the East Coast has it too, is the SEAL team, the sea, land, and air group that does all the covert operations. I mean, they're still telling right. stories about kicking tigers' ass in the training. So
yeah, in the kill house.
Is Demi Moore still part of the SEAL team?
Pardon?
You're saying Demi Moore still on that SEAL team?
Demi,
it's a great movie. Great movie.
You just thought Demi Moore was hot. That's all. Come on.
She kicked. She oh, kicked man. All those guys' butts, yeah. didn't she?
Listen, that I'll tell hey, you though. If Tiger did go through that training, which Steve, I know you've been around him a lot, so you would know. And they say he did in the second half of that documentary. That is some hellacious training. It's a wonder he didn't get killed doing it. I mean, good
right,
Lord.
Right. Right. You did. Know, in a good buddy of Hank and mine, coach by the name of hockey coach by the name of Ken Hitchcock says. It's very common in with athletes that when they're, especially their father dies, male athletes, they kind of go back to do what their dad did. Like a lot of the hockey players will go back and farm if the dad's farming. Well, I mean, Earl Woods was you know, career
Green Beret,
Army
right?
guy.
Yeah. Green Beret.
And and Tiger was, you know, fascinated with it. He was a little bit too old to be a SEAL team, but they made a, but they made an exception for the training and all that. But, I mean, he was with guys that made $60,000 a year. Now, this guy's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. He was part of one of the groups that would train together, and they'd go out for lunch. One of the guys told a story. One of the guys that was with him told the story that Tiger Woods never once offered to pick up lunch. Not once.
I don't doubt it.
So yeah, they took it out that's... on him. They took it out on him in the physical training.
Good.
I mean, the guy took Good. His knee out in the kill house and all that. Yeah, there's the stories are unbelievable. So
yeah.
Anyway,
just buy a couple of lunches. Could have said,
I'd be buying them. Maybe Rolexes. Hell.
Yeah, San Diego tends to be controversial for that, and not only that, but the tournament as well. The Farmers Insurance Open. Remember a couple of years ago when was the guy that would not pull the trigger on his shot on the last hole, on the 72nd hole? It was J.B. Holmes.
Oh.
He just stood there for 4 minutes and something seconds.
I was screaming, right. Hit it. Yeah. Hit it.
Yeah. Trying to figure out. Yeah. Well, same thing. A little controversy this year, too, Tim. What'd you think about that controversy?
Well, so what Steve's referring to, people probably would already know if you follow a little bit of golf, but on Saturday's third round, Patrick Reed hits a shot, long story short, out of a fairway bunker towards the green, misses the green to the left. He's in the rough, but it's about 200 yards away. As Steve pointed out, nobody really at this golf tournament, no volunteers, not the crowd you normally would see. That would see kind of everything as he gets to the ball, and they're playing embedded lie rules and clean in place. So he could pick the ball up because he had like 4 inches of rain leading up to the third round. And when he got there, identified his ball. It was in the rough, and it was pretty deep rough, a few inches rough, and he picked it up thinking it might be embedded and found out that in his mind it was, and then he moved it. And he called over a rules official to kind of confirm what he discovered after he had moved it, and there's where the controversy was. And the rules official felt down there, kind of felt where the ball he thought was embedded, and confirmed it and said, yes, I guess the ball was embedded. You are allowed to move it. He moved it, chipped on, made the putt, and parred the hole, went on to win the tournament. That was on Saturday. Won the tournament on Sunday. But that was the controversy, is should he have picked the ball up without getting an official to do it? Well, then Rory McIlroy pretty much had the same scenario on Sunday, did the same thing without calling over a rules official and picked the ball up out of the rough.
Not the same.
Similar.
Not the same.
Quite the same, but very similar, because even the PGA Tour came down with their official ruling and referenced Rory doing the same thing. So go ahead, Frank, if you want to make a distinction.
It wasn't the same thing, because what Patrick Reed had done is he did walk up and say, did it bounce? Did anybody see it bounce? And you heard the volunteer marshal say, did not bounce, didn't see it bounce. Okay.
Right.
So he digs around and pulls the ball out. But he inspects it. Then he sits it aside and starts digging around down in the hole where the ball was.
Yeah.
Okay. That's where the controversy started right
digging
then
around,
there.
But feeling around.
Feeling
he
around.
There.
Yeah, yeah, feeling around. Yeah. But he places the ball a foot to 2 feet away, just pops it out there while he's looking. Because he said, well, I didn't want to hold it in my hand because then it could be implied that I was cleaning the ball or palming the ball or whatever he might have been doing. So that's where I think it kind of started. And I think it's in McElroy's case, he went up to his ball. Did it bounce? Didn't see it bounce? Whatever. He asked his playing partner. He said, I think it's embedded. I'm going to check it. He reaches down. He pulls it up. He said, it was embedded. I'm going to take a drop. Puts the tee. Well, he'd already put the tee in the ground. And then cleans the ball. Hands it to his caddy. Cleans the ball and takes his drop. Didn't call over an official. Didn't look like after the fact, maybe I better cover my tracks here. And I think that's where the controversy plus the past history of that sand incident came into play there. With
my opinion, Steve, is that Patrick Reed is not a popular guy. Therefore, he gets criticized more than other players might get criticized for. As I said to Frank before we started the show, I said if that happened to Ryan Palmer, if that happened to Xander Schauffele, Victor Hovland, somebody else, I don't know that anybody would have even mentioned it. But it happens to Patrick Reed, and guess what? When it happens again, no matter how slight the infraction might be, if it's Patrick Reed, it'll blow up again.
They'll
I think
crucify.
A lot of it is his personality, Steve.
Well, you know, the thing, just watching it on TV, Tim, and you would know because you've been part of sports television and all that, do the producers and directors say, hey, we've got to create a story or we've got to find a story because the viewer, like us, would have never, ever paid any attention to what was going on if Nick Faldo and Jim Nantz and those guys wouldn't have kept hammering the issue.
They did.
Is that something that they get?
Yeah,
for
sure. Yeah, there's no doubt that
we need to create a story here because we got a bunch of boring going on.
Yeah, exactly. I think for sure that somebody in the booth says, "Let's look at it again. Let's look at it again. We got a replay. We got a replay." Now, as we all know, replays to me are the dearth of golf because it's easy to say when you super slow and HD 4D cameras and everything. Oh, look at that grain of sand that was moved. It suddenly you've got violations and you can, so they have that advantage of being able to see the replay, which of course Reed couldn't see. There was no replay out there. There's no volunteers virtually out there. So they created it themselves and kind of kept going on it. Faldo made some negative comments and Nantz said something about poor optics. So it sure doesn't look good and everything.
Nabilo did too.
In essence.
Nabilo did too.
Yeah.
Dottie Pepper did too. All of them.
And which again is on the outside looking in,
drama.
You're not playing, but now you're on the outside commenting. To stir up the pot a little bit is not going to be you're not going to be told not to do that. So I think for sure a lot of them think let's just kind of go after, because I thought it was such a non-big deal. It just happened to be the guy that it was. Somebody else does it. Since you're already picking the ball up and cleaning it anyway, would you have the chance to do that? The fact you can't see from 200 yards away that the ball bounced and very likely would not then embed on a bounce. I get it, but he clearly asked the nearest person, did you see it bounce? So he was trying to do the right thing.
Right.
No, I didn't
see
it bounce. So he's thinking, okay, that's where it landed. It flew in there. It probably is embedded. Why would he not think that? And then for them to go, oh, well, and then they show a replay. We'll see it clearly bounce. Well, he didn't see it bounce, and he asked the person who was closest to it. She didn't see it bounce. So where are you creating this issue out of it? And I'm not like Mr. Patrick Reed's favorite guy or agent or anything else, but I'm thinking – boy, you guys are just really hammering on a guy who seemed to do everything he could do to make sure. And if it is embedded, he does have every right to pick it up and clean it and move it. Right?
Right.
That's the rule.
Right.
Yep.
Well, and it didn't die that evening. That Saturday evening, I mean, everyone was talking about it. Jim Nantz and Nick Faldo were talking about it. And then Brandel Chamblee chimes in and says, hey, he broke the code. And in no circumstance his Brandel Chamblee, did he ever witness anyone do what Patrick Reed did? He broke the code, and then it just kind of perpetuated the whole deal for Friday, too. I mean, I don't necessarily think it tarnishes the victory, but man, come on. You got two players doing exactly the same thing, and you're hammering one player because he wins.
He wasn't his own best advocate when in the post-round interview with Amanda Baleonis, she asked him about it, and he said, well, Roy McIlroy did the same thing. So there you are. It's done. Forget about it.
Yeah.
He did the same thing.
Yeah.
And to me, that was kind of like
that before too. He's mentioned the same thing too, Frank, in jest, where he said, "Hey, if this was Phil Mickelson, you wouldn't be calling it on him."
Yeah. And I was thinking, when he said that, I was thinking to myself, well, that would be like going to trial for murder, and I stand up as an accused murderer and say, "Well, OJ got away with it."
Yeah.
No, that's not a good defense.
Okay. I think what happens is that Patrick Reed also comes off as a whiner oftentimes, like he did in that interview, saying, "Well, nobody's going to pick on the other guy. Why are you picking on me?" Yeah. I think at some point he has to almost be like an enforcer in hockey and just accept the role that he now has, which is in some ways, in a lot of ways, self-created, right? He has done things. He has a lot of off-the-course issues. He's done the tweeting. We all know about him and Jordan Spieth and Ryder. There's a lot of things that are self-inflicted. So just say that's my role instead of acting like, well, nobody's going to pick on this guy or that guy, because it just enhances, I think, the dislike a lot of people might have for Patrick Reed.
Yeah.
And the next, as I said, the next time something happens, and it could be the slightest little, he's jingling change in his pocket while a guy's trying to putt, if it's Patrick Reed, did you hear the jingle change? You know,
it's better competition when you've got a hero and you've got a villain, and if he can embrace that, he wants to be the hero, he wants to be Captain America, but at the end of the day, and he always says this, at the end of the day, he's still table for one. The guys don't like him. They don't want to hang around him. He talks about the PGA Tour being a big family. I'm telling you what, he's the stepchild. He is not. He's not part of their family. I'm going to put it on CBS a little bit too, because CBS, in the way that they sensationalized this whole deal, just made it so, like, they're trying to create a story out of nothing.
They bring the rules guys in and everything else, and let's go with it. Let's look at the replay. Let's reanalyze it. You're right, Steve. I mean, if it was an exciting tournament, they wouldn't have found time to do all that stuff. If they're like, well, let's get back to the action. Well, there's no action. So let's spend 15 minutes on Patrick Reed dropping or not dropping the ball. And the fact that he, you know, and to me, this is what he's all about. He comes back the next day after that might have maybe thrown some other golfers, a lot of other golfers. He comes back and shoots a 68. And just says, okay, well, there you go. I win by five. It wasn't even really close. He put his foot down and said, and I think that's what he has to embrace. It's like, if I'm going to be this guy and you guys are going to get me, I'm not trying to cheat, but if you're going to get me for everything, I'll just prove it on the golf course and walk away with the trophy and $1 million. And that's what he did. And I think when it's all said and done and written on his epitaph, that's Patrick Reed. He was a not well-liked, villainous kind of guy, and yet he's going to have whatever he's going to have, 10 wins, two majors, three majors. He's going to have a pretty outstanding career in Ryder Cups and President's Cup. And if that's the role he's got, then that's the role. And again, I think he has to look at it and say, yeah, I've created some of this. Even when he was beating Rory, that great Ryder Cup, Frank, that you were at, right? Wasn't that the one at Hazeltine?
Yes.
Where he was waving his finger at Patrick. Yeah. I mean, at Rory, after Rory would make a putt, and then he'd top his putt with another birdie, and he'd go wag his finger at. That was him doing it.
That's
created
him.
That.
Great competition.
And you're like, okay, then be that. Be that guy then. Yeah. Then say, okay, that's who I am, and you're not going to all like
me.
But I can't help it. It comes out.
You know, you said CBS did what they did, okay. And but they brought on the head of rules for the PGA Tour, and he said, no harm, no foul here, guys. We stand behind him.
Right.
And still jawing about it the next day. I mean, on Sunday, they started the show with it.
Right. Well, Brad Fable went out there, and he gave him the ruling.
Yep.
He said it was fine. And now it makes Brad Fable look like an idiot.
Yeah.
And it makes it look like there's a set of rules that the officials go by, and there's a different set of rules that the players should be going by. It just does not – the optics were not great on it, and it's mostly because of CBS's sensationalizing the whole episode.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm putting it on Faldo.
Well, he did. He did jaw on him a lot.
Yeah. And I got to be honest, Steve. We don't have to beat this dead, but you followed golf for a long, long time and been around at a high level. Let's be honest. If you really, really broke it down into small fractions of violations, and that's what I'm kind of calling this one, or marking your ball, and then when you place your ball to make your putt, you put it half an inch in front of where, whatever little ones, that's going to be seen all over the tour. It's not that unusual for those small kind of infractions, and it gets a little bit hollow to me when these guys criticize. And I'm like, you know what, Nick? If we have cameras on you for the last 20 years of your career, did we ever see you move a ball? Did you ever do something a little bit this and that? Did you mark a ball wrong? Probably, with cameras like they have them now all over you, and yet they want to come here and say, that would never happen when I was. That was never my era. I would.
One of the good guys of golf got caught in that marking the ball issue, and that was Bob Toski years ago. Remember when Toski was marking his ball on the green, and he would put the coin up under it? Well, then he would place it back, and it might be 1/64th of an inch ahead of the coin.
Yeah.
But here's the big difference is this is a game. I'm not sure if it's the only game, but it is a game where you call penalties on yourself. And there seems to be a switch now to see what I can get away with instead of being beyond reproach. And many people talk about that. Hey, my actions are going to be beyond reproach. There's going to be no question that I did the right thing. I go back to, and this week we have the greatest show on grass, which is the Waste Management Phoenix Open. I remember a few years ago when Jordan Spieth could play the game, he pulled a shot into the water on 18, and instead of dropping it, and it was marginal, he could have gone up there and dropped it on the side. He re-teed it because he didn't want there to be any question where he crossed the margin of the hazard. And I thought, man, that is some character, and that is some integrity.
Yep.
And it just seems like we're getting away from that. It's more NBA, more MLS soccer. Hey, what can I get away with? What can I
WWE?
What can I twist in a way to play to my advantage? And that's not the spirit of golf. That's for sure.
Maybe they should require that instead of going to accounting class on the PGA Tour, they should show the movie Bagger Vance and let them look at that.
Well, I mean, Frank, I mean, it goes back to what they've been taught as a kid. You're by yourself, I mean, they talk about it in a lot of professions. When you need to make a call on your own and it's only you and no one's going to know whether it's the right call or the wrong call, there's no accountability. I mean, a lot of times a call is made that is in it takes advantage of the rule.
Sure.
Or takes advantage of the situation. And I mean, that's human nature. I don't know how you're going to legislate around that, but that's one of the great things of golf that teaches you. I mean, like the first tee, hey, this is integrity. This is character. This is being a good sport. This is all about being a good citizen. And when you're playing for $1,350,000, that puts a lot on the line
there.
I will say this.
Yeah, that was the widest margin of victory at that tournament since 2008.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's saying a lot because I tell you what, that if they didn't say it was in San Diego, you would have thought that course was up in Northern California where it rains 60 inches a year. Not that it rained a lot. It rains 11 inches a year average in San Diego. Now, you get the fog and you get the marine layer and all that. But I'm telling you what. That course is so lush, it is going to be absolute brutal. Oh. This year they play the U.S. Open on that course. You narrow the fairways up a little bit. You get the rough a little bit taller. You get the fairways firm and fast, and the greens rolling at 12. And
it'll be unplayable.
Even par wins that tournament.
Hey, Steve, I wanted to ask you about this tournament before we – I've got a coaching question for you because you love coaching. You love talking about it, so I'm going to get to that. In the Super Bowl – we're going to switch gears in a second. But before, talking again about Farmers, two guys didn't make the cut even, and that is Koepka and Spieth playing in this tournament, and two guys that the PGA Tour would love to have up near the lead and being mentioned all the time and showing the highlights and whatnot. It's hard to do when they're not even making the cut. Are these two guys, and especially, I guess, more Spieth than Koepka, but are these two guys that are – if you had to put an arrow on it, up or down, like a stock, are these guys, their stock is just continuing to go down? They got problems that aren't going to be solved. In Spieth's case, he's working on, what, year 3.5, 4 of no victories?
Yeah, that's sad commentary right there with Jordan Spieth. Now, you know, anytime you change, you shift gears, they even said on the broadcast that he's getting a little bit of help from Butch Harmon. Anytime you switch something, it takes a while to get some confidence in it. I mean, very seldom does the light switch on real quickly. So he's got to tough through it. You know what? You look at his round, and he didn't have a lot of birdies. didn't have a lot of, you know, it was just a very mediocre round. I mean, she misses the cut by one shot.
Yeah, one.
As positive as he is, he's thinking, oh man, you know, I could have saved a shot here and there and there, and I've been playing on the weekend and getting some confidence. The longer you stay, a player stays in that zone where he is not confident, the harder it is to get out. They dig themselves into a hole. Something good needs to happen. I mean, we've been saying this for 2 years, Tim. It needs to happen pretty quickly for him to get back. He has the drive. He has the great attitude. More changes will come, I'm sure. At some point, Michael Greller will be gone. You know, we'll just have to wait and see. Now, Brooks Koepka, he's another one. He's out of the same mold as Patrick Reed. I mean, he's a little bit of the villain. The stuff that he says will flame guys up. You know, remember when he talked about, Dustin Johnson's DJ. Only won one major. I got a big advantage on him. I've won three of them already. He's got a knack to saying things. He's got a chip on his shoulder. He's got a knack to say things that are not well accepted by the other players. So, I mean, I don't think they're not feeling bad for Brooks Koepka. I'll tell you that.
Steve, here's what I'm thinking is Koepka kind of like a modern day Freddie Couples in that he may end his career and people go, boy, he could have been so much more if he really seemed to care. And it's, I've had so many friends ask me, they go, do you watch Koepka? Do you think he's more interested in social media? He's more interested in his goofy haircut or him and his girlfriend in Greece and taking pictures. It seems like he doesn't care. Some people think, do you think the case? I mean, some guys are more passionate than others.
That's a false bravado. I think on his part, I think that he does care. I wouldn't compare him to Fred Couples. Fred Couples is 60 and still playing, you know, at top levels in the Masters and all that. Brooks Koepka is in his 20s. I mean, he may be 30 now. Who knows? I mean, what is he? If he's 30, he just barely
about
30,
there. Yeah.
31. Yeah. I think he's 30 years old. I think when we look back at Brooks Koepka, we're going to say this guy was a flash in the pan. This guy played well for a few years. The game got away from him and he doesn't get it back. He has a power game and his putting used to be one of the strengths of his game. His putting has not been very good lately.
Terrible.
How can a guy like that miss a cut? I mean, a guy that's won four majors and he can't get, now he's been injured, but he's missed the last three cuts. He did in Houston. He did come in tied for fifth, but that was a long time ago. That was back in November of 2020. So
you're right though, Steve. You look at the guys who made the cut, right? The field to find it finished at Farmers, and nothing against any of these guys, but Jason Duffner, Kevin Stadler, KJ Choi, Harry Higgs. I could go on and on. Chase Seifert, Roger Sloan, like who? I mean, there's all these guys, they're making the cut at least, and the guys we're talking about didn't even make the cut, you know, to make a check or something like that.
That was a big number.
You can't beat Dylan Fratelli?
It was a big number that made the cut this week, too. Yeah. I think there were 78 guys that made the cut. You would think that this would be a course that would be perfect for Brooks Koepka because his length is an advantage. His strength helps him out of the rough. The rough looked, you know, tough. It's not a Bermuda grass rough or that it would be impossible at that length. But I mean, still your strength and your grip strength and your arm strength are a big advantage when you're coming out of grass that tall. But,
they're heading to waste management in Phoenix and we'll see what happens. I don't know if, I'm guessing that Koepka and Spieth are both at Waste Management. We'll see. After that, they'll both be at Pebble Beach for AT&T. So then Genesis. So we keep going on the California swing after Arizona. So it'll be interesting to see how those guys, in particular, turn things around or don't turn things around, and where they're headed. Now,
before we get away from Torrey Pines, one thing. When you looked at that, it was like 3.5-4 inch rough, and the fairways weren't that wide open, And it was playing to what, 7,700 yards, 76, 72, something like that?
It is long.
Yeah. You know what? I mean, hey.
The thing that people don't realize, too, 7,600 yards at sea level in an area of the coastline that gets a lot of heavy
thick air.
I mean, heavy air.
For sure.
That course plays so long, but I mean, it didn't seem to bother those guys. I mean, they're still under par.
I guess.
I mean, when the course is soft and the ball hits and stops, the players like that better. When the courses get really firm and fast, like they do at Firestone, like they did at Bethpage, it makes it more difficult because when the ball runs, when the ball's rolling on the ground, it makes the fairways even narrower.
Yeah.
Because we know that they're not hitting the flat fairways. They're hitting the sloped fairways. So you've got to hit a very precise, long and precise shot in order to be playable.
Nothing worse than hitting that shot down the middle, and when you get up to the ball, it's 2 yards into the rough because it rolls out from the middle of the fairway into the rough. So, hey, Steve, so obviously there's a little football game coming up. It's so tough for me this time of year because we're done with football, and I just love my football. But the Super Bowl, heading to Tampa, a couple of things there. First time ever a team has played or will be playing at home for a Super Bowl. It's never happened before, which is almost amazing in, 55 Super Bowls that they've never had a home game for any team that's lucked into playing well that same year that they have a Super Bowl. So Tampa gets that with Brady against the young phenoms and Mahomes and Kansas City and all the things that they can do from a coaching standpoint. And you like to break down coaches and see what they do in all different sports and football and hockey and everything else and how they're doing it. You've got Andy Reid, who seemed to go a long career with never having won anything, and everybody kind of ripped on it. Well, he's been in the league now for 20-something years, but he's never really gotten the ring, and now suddenly he's a genius coach. And Bruce Arians with Tampa, who seems to be kind of the swaggering, swashbuckling, you know, go out and have a beer kind of guy that goes for broke on almost every play. I'm curious how you break that down from a coaching standpoint. They're both kind of the same age group, I guess. You don't have a young phenom against another one, but who do you like in this game, and is coaching going to make a difference?
Well, I think it really will, and I think you've got a veteran in Tom Brady who's a coach that's on the field as a player coach. We saw this in a little bit of the playoffs where the timeout's called and they discuss what's going on. I think in the NFL, as much as any sport, you get a lot of the retreads. The coaches, I think, in this event this year are playing a backseat to the actual players because they have the ability. Both quarterbacks have the ability to change the plays. And I would imagine on the defense too, the captain of the defense on both sides has an opportunity during the play to change coverage and to change the plays and all that. So, I'm not sure exactly what kind of role the head coaches are going to play in that, hey, let's just get the guys ready. Let's take the pressure off the guys. I know Ken Hitchcock always used to say in the biggest events, whether it be an Olympics or an NHL, Stanley Cup final, the head coach just will take all the pressure off the teammates, off all the team players, and let the competition create the intensity. The coach will not create the intensity in this event. So, I mean, I called Tom Brady against the NFL MVP last week.
Yeah.
And I'm sticking with him. I think this is his, to win here. It's at home. I don't know if being at home is going to make much of a difference for him.
Not a big crowd, but yeah.
I mean, I think he sees this as kind of his, it could be his last hurrah. And him and Gronk and his buddies, this could be a big deal. This could be a storybook ending to a great career.
Frank, what do you think? Who are you liking in the game?
Well, to back up for a minute about the Green Bay game, there were, speaking of coaches and making calls, there was a questionable field goal that was kicked in that game instead of going for it, and that cost them. So just
never wrote that down.
Just a yeah, that's tough. That I can understand why we saw Aaron Rodgers riding around in a pickup truck with a six pack in the back. he probably found him somewhere in the woods.
I mean, think about that.
Let's look at that scenario then, Frank. You think if it was a different quarterback, that quarterback would have called a timeout and discussed it with his coach? I mean, yeah. Aaron Rodgers, he's a. I mean,
I'm surprised Rodgers didn't.
That's what I'm too. A lot of the observers say that Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback out there right now.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And
one of the best ever played
this year. But he looks so disengaged in the whole game.
You're right. You're right.
He always does. And to your point, though, Steve, yet he's had an MVP season at 37 years old. He's obviously headed to the Hall of Fame. He's got all kinds of career numbers. And you're right. You watch him, and if he didn't have a team that always seems to win a lot, Green Bay seems to win quite a few games. They've been to five NFC Championship games, only won one Super Bowl, and only gotten to one Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers. But they've always have a pretty good team. But you're right. The criticism could be, is there any sense of intensity from that guy? Because everything, he just has this doe-eyed kind of look about him, like, you know, well, here we go, and oh, that was incomplete, and let's go to the sideline. We're going to punt. Nothing seems to get him too high or too low, and it always seems to me it would frustrate the heck out of me if I was a fan going, geez, Aaron. But in that scenario, go up to the coach and say, Coach, I'm Aaron Rodgers. We're 8 yards away from a touchdown, which we need, because even if we kick a field goal, guess what? We still need a touchdown again. I'm on the 8-yard line. I'm the best player in the league. He's not going to say that, but this is a fact. Let me do what I can do. We know we can kick a field goal, but don't hope that we get the ball back, which we never did, and see if I can do it again. I don't know how you don't let that guy win or lose the game for you right there.
Did he have greater intensity?
Quarterbacking
is easy, yeah.
On third down, I thought he could have run that ball into the end zone.
I did, too.
And got touchdown. Yeah. I thought, run it, and he didn't. He tried to make that pass.
And he threw a bad pass. Yeah, that was a bad call there, but that's what you've got the guy there. And he, by the way, went to Steve's alma mater, Frank, just so you – that's why he loves Aaron Rodgers.
Yes.
They're both Cowboys.
Well, his brother –
Cow Bears, baby.
His brother, who's a sportscaster now, we got to know here in Nashville. He went to Vanderbilt. So, and Aaron used to come to the Vanderbilt games. But did he have greater intensity when he was dating Danica Patrick?
I don't know. I don't think so. Yeah.
Now, there's off some the field, intensity, maybe. 200-plus miles per hour. Yeah.
He just has that. That's his style, and that's what it is. And again, he's going to go to the Hall of Fame. But I think when his career is over, that might be his last shot. You don't know.
Yeah.
I think a lot of Packer fans are going to be like, man, we should have won more Super Bowls than one. We should have gotten to more Super Bowls than one with this guy who is a generational talent. He is as good as any quarterback that's probably ever played the game skill wise, and certainly one of the best of the last 25, 30 years. And you got one ring, which is nice, but they kind of think they should be Brady-like.
Then it goes to the front office at that point and drafting and players and all that. So to answer your question, Brady, Bucks.
You think so?
Oh,
yeah,
good.
I'm with you,
too.
I'm a Bucks fan and always have been forever when they were terrible.
Oh, is that right?
Forever when Spurrier was down there.
I just have a feeling that there's magic, that Brady has, quite literally, has magic that you can't put your finger on. You don't know how did he beat Atlanta when they were down by 25 at halftime? How does he do the things he's doing at his age? A lot of it you just don't explain. You just say, well, he's Brady, and Brady's going to beat Drew Brees, which Brees, I think, had a better team with the Saints, beat him. Certainly, I think Green Bay had home field and the weather and MVP of the league and all these other. He beats them. I think Mahomes and Kansas City are phenomenal and certainly should be favored probably, but I just would have a hard time betting against Tom Brady.
It's going to be on the defense. It's going to be on the Tampa Bay defense to keep Mahomes off the field. They got to keep him off that field.
If it's possible. I mean, if it's possible. And they're a great come-from-behind team, right? I mean, we know Kansas City, even in last year's Super Bowl, they were down by 10 in the fourth quarter and won the game. I mean, they don't seem to have a problem trailing in games and go, oh, okay, well, so we're down by a couple of touchdowns. No big deal. And they come back. That it doesn't psych them out like it does a lot of other teams. So even if Brady were to get a little bit of a lead, the game's never over with Mahomes and those. I just look forward to it.
It's going
to
be great.
Should be a good one. Interesting that all three of us go with Tampa
Bay. So one last question. What's everybody's Super Bowl menu? Steve?
Oh, gosh.
Food.
Frank, I have a very restricted menu. I'm going to go dairy-free, gluten-free. Probably some corn chips and tortilla chips and guacamole.
Guac.
And yeah, and I'll probably go some popcorn as well.
Oh, there you go.
Tim, popcorn in there, huh? Frank, I think I'm going to go with not too far from Steve either. We're both Texas guys, so I'm going to probably go with some nachos. I believe my lovely wife will probably do some fancy kind of nachos, maybe a little grilled chicken on them or something like that. Yeah, it kind of gives you free rein to go a little bit nuts. That's not dinner, obviously. We're talking about dinner. I'm going to have popcorn. But during the game, yeah, I'll probably go with some nachos. And I am a chip-aholic. When it comes to potato chips, I seriously am one of those guys that if you don't stop me, the bag will be gone.
Bet you can't eat
like,
just
okay,
one.
Stop me, somebody. Stop me. So I'll probably have some potato chips, too.
Greatest advertising tagline of all time. Bet you can't eat just
okay,
one.
Okay, Frank, what are you drinking, What are you drinking?
Well, actually, I'm not going to drink Glenlivet during the game. That's a later in the day drink or night drink. Probably have some Coronas during the game, and we're going to have.
Good call.
I'm not going to cook here. We're catering it from Mission Barbecue. We're going to have beef brisket. We're going to have pulled pork. We're going to have Mission Barbecue home style green beans. Mission Barbecue mac and cheese. Twice baked potatoes. We're going to do it up.
Nice.
Lots of food.
Did you freeze that bag of cheese from Memphis, that place you go in Memphis?
I have Poncho's cheese dip. That will be first and foremost in the forefront of this event is my Poncho's cheese dip.
Steve, when he goes to Memphis, there's a Poncho's
restaurant,
right, that has cheese, and it's like Frank just drools over this cheese dip.
It's fabulous.
And it comes in a bag.
Well,
so I go.
5-pound bag. I get it. They ship it to me, FedEx, dry ice, 5-pound
bag. In a bag.
Yeah.
It's a bag of cheese.
But it's the best cheese dip you'll ever eat. And it's West Memphis, Arkansas is where Poncho's restaurant is.
Well, do you just go straight cheese or do you put the cheese on something? You dip it in something?
Yeah. What you do is you take the real thin chips,
the ones that break off in the cheese.
You're not supposed to try to dip it. You just push them down in there. You heat the chips.
All full of broken chips.
The cheese is room temperature. It's yellow cheese. And you heat the chips. Get those chips hot. And that's just. But then when you dip them in there, they melt the cheese, and you pull it out. It's great.
Oh, nice! Oh. I'm hungry. Getting hungry.
I am too. Is it lunchtime? I
wonder if I'm gonna get some free Poncho's cheese dip. I'm gonna send him a clip from the show.
I'm hoping it's a good game.
That stuff's expensive. Like
6
hey,
o'clock
Timmy,
kickoff.
Do we have any this week for the greatest show on grass? Do we have fans there this week or no?
Limited.
In Phoenix, I don't know. Yeah, I think it's going to be some fans.
Uber limited.
Some. But Arizona is different California, right? It's a lot of it is state by state. What is the state allowing you to do? Arizona's been much more open. Everything's more open than California, I guess. And so they're allowing some fans to. Yeah, go ahead.
I'll get it.
Steve Johnson's golf ranch.
Yeah,
like to tee it up?
That's Jordan Spieth. That's Spieth calling.
Dominoes.
Landshark. So, yeah, I think there will be some fans there. It'd be interesting on 16, Frank. I mean, they normally have, what, 100,000, 80,000 people just on one hole? I mean, they'll be lucky to have
it'll
a couple
different.
Hundred. Is that the way it's going to play out?
It'll be different. And I don't know. You know, the Players' Championship, we just received an email from the PGA Tour about media at the Players' Championship. Now, Florida's pretty much open, very limited, and uber-limited media. They're just not going to have much
over,
media.
So they're allowing media?
Month.
Yeah.
Little over
they're allowing media at the Players?
Major, yeah.
Very little. I mean, just like ESPN, NBC, who carries the tournament, AP, which is Doug Ferguson, who writes for AP.
Yeah.
Very limited. I mean, radio shows and things, they may have like Sky Sports there, but I don't think we're going to be there. Now, we probably will go down if we can work it out with Marriott Sawgrass or Omni Amelia Island Plantation like we do every year and do
just
live
not on
shows.
The property.
From there, and then, but you can't get close. You can't interview the players. You can only talk to them if they happen to come to the step and repeat, which for our listeners, a step and repeat is where you see them with all the logos of the tournament behind them and then a microphone, and then the media's down in front 10 feet away asking questions. But that's it. And so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you're not going to really have much. It's just going to be controlled by the major media outlets. So. Hmm. It's killed us for last year, as you know.
And the Masters still going to have some fans, correct?
Same situation there. So
limited.
Yeah. Why? So it's been since the Players Championship last year, we've done one event outside of these shows we're doing remotely right now, which has just been brutal for us. Because we're, you know, we're normally at least 75% of the PGA Tour tournaments out there, and LPGA.
Yeah.
So
it is. All right, Steve, we're going to let you go so you can take care of everybody at the golf ranch.
I've got pizza orders to fill. I've got a bunch of stuff for you guys.
If people want to send you a video.
For the listeners, this is Golf Talk America. So for anyone that wants to get better at their golf game, send me a video, down-the-line video, to golfschools@hankhaney.com. It doesn't have to be fancy. Tell me what your big miss is. Within 24 hours, we're going to send you back a coach video. Get it. 2020 is over. That's history. 2021 is going to be your best year ever, and we're going to help you get there.
You got it. Golfschools@hankhaney.com. We'll remind you. Perfect, alrighty. Perfect. All right, Stevie Ray J, take care, man. We appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
All right. See ya. Steve Johnston. Yep. And do that. It really will help for anybody that's out there that wants to get advice from somebody who knows what they're talking about, and you don't pay anything, and they'll get it right back to you. It's all done digitally, right?
A down-the-line video means have a friend.
You don't have to go to a range or anything else.
Set up the camera behind you.
Shoot you.
And shoot it from behind you. Not behind your back.
You're looking down
down your target line.
The fairway.
Where you want to see.
Exactly. Yeah. So people can see exactly where you're trying, and Steve will figure out why you're slicing or hooking or topping every shot or whatever it might be. Golfschools@hankhaney.com. Yeah. Perfect. All right, Frank. Well,
who better? Who better to help?
I mean, covered it all.
The man's only taught the greatest of all time. He's been around him. So
I know. I know he's been around Tiger, and he knows what he's talking about. So
yeah, he does.
And a lot of other. I mean, he's always got
a lot of.
He's always got guys, junior golfers and stuff. That's kind of actually Steve loves the junior golfers. A lot of these guys do. When you get into coaching of any kind, it really is about taking someone and just watching whether they turn into Tiger. Obviously, very unlikely. But the fact that you take a young kid and he's 10, 12 years old and plays in high school or maybe goes on to college, they take a lot of pride in that.
Turn frowns into smiles. Turn frowns into smiles.
Show that kid how to play a game. Didn't know which end of the club to hold when he came to me.
Yeah.
Suddenly, now he's a high school star.
So, yeah, it really is. The teachers are a special group because they get so much satisfaction and so many thrills out of just seeing somebody get a little bit better. No, you don't have to be a Tiger. You don't have to be a... Oh, by the way, speaking of better, our buddy RP did pretty good. If he could made a few birdies, he'd have been right up there. But he was in tied for second place.
Tied for second.
Ryan Palmer.
Five guys.
Yeah. So he made almost $500,000 and got a check for that. Yes. So let's give him a call and see if we can borrow a couple of hundred grand this afternoon.
I felt bad for...
right.
You think that's coming?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, right.
Hey, RP. I can't. Yeah, whatever. Give me some money. I felt bad for the local guy here, the North Texas grad, Carlos Ortiz.
Oh,
tied for lead with Reed, right, going into the final round on Sunday, and blows up with a 78.
I know, it was
basically
horrible.
Shot 10 shots worse than Reed. Reed shot 68. He shot 78. There's a difference here, Frank. And this is PGA Tour, and it happens every week. We don't highlight it, but this happens every week. Carlos Ortiz tied for the lead going into the final round with Reed. Reed wins and picks up $1,350,000. Carlos blows up, shoots 10 shots more, and picks up $50,000. It's only a difference of $1.3 million between yesterday with Carlos Ortiz and Patrick Reed.
Ten strokes,
$1.3 million the difference.
That's basically $130,000 a stroke. 10 strokes.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Ouch. I mean,
if you sat there and thought of it, it'd be like being in GameStop or not being in GameStop stock. You'd be kicking yourself or thrilled or whatever. But that's the up and down of the PGA Tour from one day. Just one day was literally $1.3 million difference between those two guys who were there dead even on Saturday.
Yeah, I misspoke at the start of the show when I said after the 10th hole on Sunday. It was the 10th hole on Saturday when Patrick Reed.
Saturday.
I meant to say Saturday. Right. But Sunday was just not the most exciting of tournaments, and I can understand what we talked about earlier. They had to do something to make excitement. I mean, have somebody run naked down the 18th fairway. I don't care.
Yeah.
Get a streaker.
Yeah.
Get Jacobson out there to tackle him did.
It kind of is what it is, and beautiful scenery, right? I love watching Torrey Pines because it's such a unique,
beautiful place.
Have you played there on the cliffs? Yes, I have.
How'd you play
Torrey Pines a couple of times? I'm trying to remember. Not very well. I don't remember. It was way back. Yeah, I was. I couldn't even tell you my score.
Yeah.
But I do remember it being really challenging, like really long. Even we didn't play the tips, but we played back when the Cowboys would have training camp out in Thousand Oaks, still do out in Southern California, and sometimes they would go for 4 or 5 days at a time and train with the Chargers in San Diego.
Yeah.
So the whole team would move down to San Diego, and so we'd be down there and have a day off or whatever and go play Torrey Pines. And I just remember it being really beautiful and cool and neat, but some of those drives, it's like, boy, you got to crush it just to get to the fairways.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
it's going to be a hell of a U.S. Open. It's going to be one hell of a U.S. Open, because if they're going to crunch up the greens, they're going to firm the fairways
up. Tighten up that fairway.
Tighten them up. Yeah. The grass will be the rough will be four and a half inches, and
it'll be like threading a needle. I mean, I got to think that some of those tee shots, they'll be standing back there way, way back in those tee boxes and thinking, I've got to hit that fairway. And from back there, you're thinking it's threading a needle.
It looks like a balance
beam.
Like
it's about 10 yards wide, and I got to somehow hit this ball long, because you can't finesse it, right? You can't just like tap it out there to get it in the fairway and have 230 coming in. So you got to crush it and then hope that your crush, So
well, that was the problem this week, too, though. That was the problem this week, too. It was playing so long for them because of the wet conditions that they were having to hit. You know, they were missing a lot of greens because they were having to hit irons they don't normally hit into those greens. Or
when you take
7, 8, 9 iron and put the pedal down on it, which can also cause major problems.
Right. And as you know, you don't get the spin. You don't get the accuracy when you're hitting a 5 iron instead of an 8 iron right into some of these greens. You're just lucky. You're hoping to hit at the green.
Yeah.
And wherever it ends up, then you're going to putt from there. So you don't have a lot of birdie opportunities, as you can tell. I mean, you know, to win it at 14 under, everybody else was at 9 under. Reed played obviously well,
but everybody else
9 under over 4 rounds is not big numbers.
As my favorite saying still goes, if I were standing there and it was Friday afternoon and I was on the cut line, I would just say, why can't we just take the running car? Get out of here. My favorite commercial.
Please.
Yeah, man. Okay. Well,
all right.
It's been fun.
We finished it. We finished it. We're all up
there.
Okay. The tour is heading to Phoenix. We'll see how much fun it's going to be. It should be fun to watch anyway. I always encourage everybody to watch golf because it's beautiful scenery, if nothing else, to sit at home and watch. So be sure to tune in, and we'll see what happens at the Waste Management. In the meantime, thanks to Steve Johnson for being with us. Again, remember to go to the website if you want some help, some coaching from some of the top guys. Go to golfschools@hankhaney.com. Send them your video. Just a short 20-second video, and they'll send something back with a little bit of hot tips for you how to work on your game. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks for being with us, everybody. And remember to join us next time right here on Golf Talk America.